The car you drive every day should be fun.
But it has to do the boring stuff too, like commute, be affordable, and haul your groceries.
You can have both, and we'll help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Porsche has published a map of the best driving roads that have been sent in to them via hashtag GTS Routes, via their new car, the new GTS line of the 911. And they've got this map that I've been cruising around and looking here and thinking, we need to cover this. We need to talk about this. But you could argue, and rightfully so, that the best driving roads in the world has been covered ad nauseum for years. Many publications have done this.
Sure.
All kinds of people have written articles. You can just simply Google it, and you'll come up with all kinds of roads. But what Todd and I want to talk about is not the best driving roads in the world and the usual suspects that we all think of, but really more along the lines of, what's your therapy? What's your favorite driving road? Because Todd and I have ours, but of course we haven't driven nearly all the roads on the planet quite yet. We're working our way there. But But it's more along the lines of what we want to talk about here is our favorite driving roads. And even this Porsche map, as cool as it is, the ones around Salt Lake City don't even mention the ones that are our favorites.
Which the really good ones.
I'm
fascinated
by. So therefore, Porsche's incomplete here. We need to.
You know what I find interesting?
somebody
will probably kill themselves doing this, but somebody at some point should try to count the number of Porsche mentions in one podcast. And another person should actually compile the number of podcasts we've started where Porsche was the first word. You've added to that list tonight as well, which I think is quite impressive. But you're right. I mean, everybody has these. I mean, I have an app on my phone that I got, I mean, years ago. I don't even think they make it anymore, but an app on my phone that was a driving roads app that BMW created that gets updated. There's a lot of other ways to find these that are, you can actually chase some of the motorcycle sites, because a lot of the times the good motorcycle roads are also the good driving roads. And so you can chase it that way as well. There's a lot of ways to do this. But you and I kind of wanted, I mean, we get a lot of questions about how do we find roads? What are great roads? We're going to talk about that. We're going to list a few. We're going to ask for your submissions as well. We also, of course, do have a car debate coming up. Of course, this is a Tuesday podcast, so it's a topic Tuesday. That will be, guess what, about driving roads. We have a car debate coming up that I am still scratching my head about.
Agreed.
It's like a parallel universe car debate. It doesn't even feel like it connects to reality, or at least not my reality. So we're going to talk about that car debate for Jay, and then so many great questions. Thank you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I have marked a few that are kind of all over the map on topics, and I look forward to diving into those as well.
Yeah, we've got a ton of them on here. So great questions, everyone. Thank you again. This is really fun. But as Todd said, you heard him mention that we're going to ask for your submissions for driving roads. And again, these are not just coming up with the roads that we all think of, like Stelvio.
Sure.
Well, Todd and I have never driven that road, so that's not on our list. So my question to all of you listening is, what's on your list? And send it to us, and we're going to compile this on the website as Volume 1. We can turn this into as many encyclopedic volumes as we want with your help, with your submissions. But I thought, there's so many articles out there, but you can probably find the article and think, well, my road isn't on there. This writer, this author doesn't know about my road and my favorite place and, you know, the thing that I think about. So that's what Todd and I want to talk about, is our own favorites. It's not about Stelvio, although I want to know South America. I want to know Europe. I want to know, you know, the Baltic states, all those great places we don't know of. So send those in, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, the same place you send your car debates. But just, you know, here's my favorite driving road. Here's me. And it just, it doesn't have to be one or two, maybe. And that's fine. But I think you should kick it off here.
Well, what's also interesting on this is you guys have asked off and on, you've asked, how do we find roads? And one of the things that Paul and I have joked about and laughed about is that this show would have been so much harder 15, 20 years ago. Because one of our best resources is Google Maps, because you can, we can go to a location and then we can start digging around on Google Maps and you can do the squiggle. And this is how weird I am. And I will admit that this is weird. I will actually sometimes, when I find a road that I – for a place I haven't been before and I'm scouting a road, I'll do the little guy down on the road on Google Maps, and then I'll walk that guy down the road picking shoot locations. And the way my brain works, I have a really good brain for visual imaging. and remembering visual images. And I can then drive down that road having only seen the photos, only seen the Google car image, and I can refine those camera positions having done it on Google. I know I'm not normal, but I've done that more than once.
I want to say you've got somewhat of a photographic memory. Do you feel that way? Do you think so?
I do pretty well. I mean, sometimes better than others. Don't always get stuff first time, but if I like walk through a video game or if I go down a road or this Google thing I'm talking about, I mean, those images stay really well locked and I can reference them. Mm-hmm. And I'm good with spatial realization in relation to images too. I'm very good at that, which I didn't realize for a long time was weird or atypical, but I've been in enough situations now where I realize, you know, there was that one time, now that I'm thinking about it, where you and I and Edgar were driving down a road, I'm going to come up, 33 in Ojai. It's a great road. It's a wonderful road outside of Los Angeles. We've shot a good number of pieces there. Last year we shot our Focus RS versus its competitor's piece there.
That's right.
We were driving down that road. We hadn't been there in probably 8 months, at least, maybe even a year. And we were driving down that road together, and I got on the radio, and I said, I forget who was leading, but I said whoever was leading, I was like, all right, around this next corner, you're going to see that tree on the left and the turnout. That's where we want to turn out for the next camera position. And you told me after the fact that Edgar leaned over to you and said, how does he do that? Because I hadn't been on this road in the better part of a year, and I knew exactly what corner we were. That my brain just works that way. I don't have an explanation for it.
The rest of us are playing catch up when you do that, because you'll say, okay, the turnout there, I have to associate it by a memorable car shoot. I can almost do it, and sometimes I can't.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If I, you know, say, well, why didn't you just say the Corvette C7 corner where we did the beauty shots, or the Nissan GTR corner where we had the whatever? I have to associate it with a car and a memory, and that helps me tremendously. But you can just be like, well, I remember a bottle cap, and there was a cigarette butt over there and a tree. You guys know what I'm talking about? We're like,
It's like
you got me.
We're driving along at 80, and I'll be like, yeah, okay, it's a left, and then a right, and then the turnout I'm talking about.
It's amazing,
I know.
It's weird.
It's very amazing. But I have to say, in California, 33 in Ojai, which is honestly kind of in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's a road you go to because you're intending to drive it.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to go to Ojai normally. I mean, there are people that live there, and it's great, but it's almost dead center between the western edge of Los Angeles and Santa Barbara is Ojai.
Yeah.
And you just turn off and you find 33, and it's one of these cool roads, and I want to relate it to one in Utah as well, where about every 5 miles it kind of changes personality. Which is one of the things I just love about a really good mountain road. I mean, all of the roads I really love are a little bit mountainous, and I like that sensation of, if I get this wrong, I'm airborne. I like that sensation. That's not normal either, but I do enjoy that.
Yikes.
But Ojai just changes its personality and the style of the road about every 5 miles. There's some high plain stuff. There's some tight forest stuff in the trees. I'm very impressed by it. And I'll stay in California, though, for a minute.
Okay.
A couple you've probably heard of are the Pines to Palms Highway.
Good.
Over in Palm Springs, Palm Desert area. We shot our BMW M235i and Audi S3 piece there recently. I mean, a couple years ago. What's interesting is that recently I've noticed some Motor Trend stuff and some Drive stuff, some others shooting on that road because it's just a great road. And if you're ever in Palm Springs, Palm Desert for any reason, you can take a good part of the day and that road is spectacular. Highly recommend that. When we did our GT350 shoot in the San Francisco Bay Area, this was one of those Google search roads.
Yeah,
Mines Road south of Livermore, California. If you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, try that road. It is surprising because it goes so much farther than you probably need it to, and it keeps changing up. And there were some places where it was narrow, too. There were some places where it was, okay, good, we have two lanes. Other places where it was like, this is kind of a lane and a half. I think we better slow down a lot. But it was a very cool road.
Right.
And then one of my all-time favorites we featured in Mid-Engines and Mountains, that feature film we did, with the Lotus, the 4C, and the Cayman. It's called Onion Valley Road. It's a road to nothing. It's a road outside of Independence, California, which is on the eastern edge of the California Sierra Nevada Mountains there. So it's a tiny little town of Independence, which is kind of near nothing. But you go westbound out of Independence, and it's Stelvio-style switchbacks up to about 10,500 feet because it's a major hiking trailhead. But there's no other purpose for it.
Yeah.
That's a great road. Yeah. And so if you're going up there, you're going up there to hike, or you're going up there, if you're weirdos like us, you've driven hours to now drive this road. But that's one of the roads that we featured. Seriously, it's one of the roads we featured on Mid Engines of Mountains. And I knew about it because I had done a solo backcountry trip for 3 or 4 days, and I had used that road. And this is back when I had my Z car. And I remember it was one of those kind of glorious moments. I mean, I love being in the backcountry anyway, but I came out of like 3 days in the backcountry by myself, which is always really recharging and challenging.
Yeah.
And I got into my Z car, threw my backpack in the back of the Z car, took off the T-tops. Yes, I'm suddenly in a movie from 1980, but stay with me.
Did you have a cell phone antenna with a little curly Q on
you
it?
You know I did. Yes, I had the cell phone that was brick-sized.
Awesome.
No, but I went hammering down this road, and I was halfway down the road and thought, we have to shoot this. We have to shoot this road. And it was years later we came back with those cars for that feature. It's one of my all-time favorites in the U.S., and it's near nothing. It's just like a destination road for no purpose other than that. But I have to mention that one.
If you're weirdos like us, you drive a long way to go drive?
What? Uh-huh. Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, that's my California kind of headlines list. I mean, there's so many. California is littered with them, and you and I have done a lot of them. I've got a couple other states I want to touch on, but I mean, there's so many I won't cover. It's not even funny.
Well, yeah, and the thing that you and I have marveled, every time we're in California, Onion Valley Road is a huge, great example. Everything is paved. When we're looking on the Google Maps, or we're, you know, dropping the little guy onto the blue line, and you know,
he
gives us the street view. Everything usually is paved. Not so in Utah, not so everywhere else. It's almost like we can count on some squiggly line. And I liked how you said it when we were doing planning for Mid Engines and Mountains. You said, wherever the spaghetti draped on the side of a mountain is, that's what we're looking for. And you can pretty much be guaranteed it's paved. It's funny, you know, cycling websites rate these roads differently. They rate them by a scent. We don't care, a scent, whatever. We just twisty, windy, apexy.
Yep, yep.
And it's those kinds of roads that are not on all the usual suspects kinds of articles. I mean, you kind of have to know about that one. You kind of have to been doing some digital satellite searching with Google Maps, all that kind of stuff.
And
it's fun to, you know, share that kind of stuff and talk about it because, yeah, I highly recommend it. You drive for a long way to go drive, and it resets you. But, you
know, it's great.
Highway 20, just west of Shreveport, all the way across Texas, isn't on the list. It's, you know.
What are you talking about? Come on, why wouldn't that be on there? I mean, that's genius stuff right there.
Oh, yeah. That's what, like 850 miles or something like that, just under, across the width of Texas.
Yes, and having grown up in Texas and having done that drive a few times, Texas is one of the only states I can think of that just wants to rub in your face how big it is. And when you cross, going westbound, you cross over into Texas from Louisiana, as soon as you cross the border on either 10 or 20, either one, the first road sign you see is a road sign that shows you 850 miles to El Paso. Just to rub it in. Just, there's no reason for you to know that, but just so you're aware, it's that far. It's ridiculous. But most of that is insanely flat. I will say, having grown up in Texas and driven around there a lot, the Austin Hill Country area actually has some really good roads.
You've mentioned that. I've not tried this. I've not experienced this.
They're not, I mean, they're not mountain roads, obviously, because it's Texas, but the Hill Country does some surprisingly good elevation changes, and, you know, you can get around the Lake Travis area there, and, you know, there is some stuff that is surprisingly good in the Austin area. You wouldn't expect it because most of Texas, I hate to say it, is what you envision. It's, oh, look, this road goes straight, and I can see to the curvature of the earth. There's a lot of that in Texas, but Austin is a real exception, or the whole Hill Country area there. There are some surprising roads. I wish I could call out some specifics, but it's been a long time since I drove there. I mean, I can run around on the Google map here and find a few, but there are definitely some around the Lake Travis and Beehive area and that kind of stuff, because I used to go there to climb. Here's the crazy thing. Long before we were ever shooting the show,
so
most of the places that I would drive to rock climb or to go backcountry ended up being, unbeknownst to me, like a decade's worth of road scouting for shooting the show later. It's like, oh, you know what road we need? And Paul be like, where did you get this road?
Yeah,
and that
no
wasn't
kidding.
Even pulling it up on the map. It was just me going, oh, I've driven it like 10 times to go climbing. Let's just go out there. So, yeah, it is amazing how that stuff relates, actually.
So funny. Well, I will recommend one that's near us in Utah, and that is Highway 150 as part of the Icon Chute. And that mm-hmm. is also known as Mirror Lake Highway that goes all the way up to, I think it's Bald Peak, one of these peaks out here. And deep into the mountains there, and it just – that was the road that you and I were chasing each other in the M2 and the 1M mm-hmm. and just yep. trading off yep. and going – we were speechless when we got out.
Yeah.
We were up there too near Wyoming and just
marveling. If you envision Utah – the shape of Utah is essentially it's a rectangle, but it has a corner taken out of it. That corner kind of points towards Salt Lake, and this road actually heads up into Wyoming right through that kind of removed square, that removed corner of Utah. So you can drive 150 all the way to Wyoming. I don't know that you'd want to, but you can. And that was the shoot day for the 1M M2 part of Icon, which was awesome. But there was another road used in Icon and also used on our Miata generation piece here in Utah. One of my favorites, Highway 35, goes from a city called Camas to another city called Hanna. And it reminds me quite a bit. To me, it's our Utah equivalent of that road in Ojai, mm-hmm. where about every 5 miles it's different. And that I love that road. It's a great road. Now, the difference between that road and the road in Ojai is you're never going to see enormous cattle or moose or a random herd of sheep on the one in Ojai. Whereas all of the above I have seen on the one here. And when you drive a car as small as I do, you come around the corner. We were actually leading a drive one time on this road, and we came down the road at a little bit of speed. Right at dusk, it's like right at that time when you think you probably should turn on your headlights, but it's not quite that dark yet.
Actually,
exactly. No, exactly right. You remember this. We came around that corner, and walking down the middle of the downhill lane was, I swear to you, the largest bull I have seen in my life. And he happened to be the color of midnight. He was like a black hole for all light. He just sucked it all up. He didn't care. He was 2/3 the width of my FRS. He didn't care that he was in the middle of the road. You were going to move for him. And thank God he wasn't near a corner.
No kidding.
Because I can't imagine coming around a corner to be surprised by it. I was surprised enough by it because it was so hard to see, but he was just this black hole in the lane, and we all got down to like walking pace and eased our way by him. And of course, he's eyeing all of us like, "What are you doing?
What are you doing on my road?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Seriously,
here?
Yeah, all bad.
Why
all
is
bad.
That?
So we've never had
hairy
wildlife
rock
like that
walking in the middle of the road. It's huge.
Exactly.
Did a boulder fall off the mountain? Why is it walking and
he
looking back at me?
He was all bad. But like, we never had that in Ojai, but we have had that in Utah. Those are a couple of great ones. There's another one in Utah I need to take you on that actually Chance took me on last summer. Nebo Canyon Loop. It's south of Salt Lake a little bit. Nebo Canyon Loop is a spectacular road. It's surprisingly good and goes through a couple of great peaks and has some ridiculous twisties in it. It's got a little bit of everything, too. But, of course, that's the thing. Some of these great ones are near nothing. I mean, Nebo Canyon Loop isn't really that close to where we are, whereas the one that we're talking about, the Mirror Lake and the Hanna, they're not that far. You know, they're under an hour.
Yeah.
Nebo is a road trip to get to it, but then it's a great road.
So crazy. Yeah, there's some others that we've experienced. We've gotten some press cars out of Denver and done a few things up in the Rockies there. Gosh, I remember, you know, growing up there. I grew up in Fort Collins, so yeah, all the canyon roads, Bing Thompson there, and all the canyon roads are kind of fun. I'd like to go back and shoot those actually.
Yeah, one of my favorites is the Peak to Peak Highway. It's Highway 72 and Highway 7. It goes kind of from the Nederland area up to Estes Park. Mm-hmm. Goes by Long's Peak there. Yeah. We drove that actually years ago. We had a Buick review we did up there. I mean, that's a great road. And then there's one that I have scouted and not yet driven, but I have seen plenty of it, and it is locked in my brain, as we talked about before. Highway 550, western edge of Colorado, Durango to Ouray. Look at that on a map.
Ooh.
That's just – it's like somebody was having a seizure or possibly a seismic event and tried to draw a road. I mean, it's just – that to me is perfect. I just can't wait. I want to get on that road. Of course, it's not overly close to us, but that's on my short list for sure.
No kidding. Wow, these are just it's sort of still in the middle of winter here, and so I just got to dreaming about good driving roads that we need to go experience, it just kind of got me thinking. So that's why we're doing this. But I will say, write to us, as I've said, with your own kind of off the radar sort of road, because, again, these articles that you can read about are endless. And, you know, it would include Mulholland Highway in Los Angeles and all these usual suspects, which are great, but just over-trafficked and part of the scenery, part of the landscape already. The ones we're talking about, you have to get out there and go discover. And that's kind of the hidden gems that I think we're looking for. And it's just to share. It's, you know, of course, not everybody listening is going to go drive your personal road instantly. But it's just more, you know, well, hey, here's some great stuff.
One of the things, I'm glad you brought up kind of the usual suspects there, because one of the things that happens, obviously, for obvious geographical reasons, is the stuff that's close to a major city just has a whole lot more people on it. And so sometimes to find the real driving nirvana of it, you have to drive a while, because once you got there, like that Onion Valley thing, you're going to be the only car on that road. Why? Because no one has a reason to be there. I mean, there's just there's really not a good reason to be there other than I'm hiking and how many of you are there, and or I'm driving it. So you're in the middle of nothing. I mean, you drove hours to get there. But of course, as a result, you have this perfect road you can run laps on.
That was the road that I found the elk being tranquilized and helicoptered way up into the backcountry.
No, it was the bighorn sheep. If you listen to our behind the scenes podcast pretty early on, it was in our first year of podcasting, we did a behind the scenes piece on Mid-Engines and Mountains and that shoot. And we came across some of the most bizarre veterinary medicine being practiced on the side of a mountain that included low flying helicopters and tranquilized bighorn sheep. I'm not making it up. That actually happened. And that was at the top of that road.
We were so surprised that cameras didn't come out instantly. I mean, when a helicopter is hovering 10 feet off the deck and dangling a bighorn sheep underneath while veterinarians are doing their thing, it's a little distracting. So
nobody thinks, you know what I ought to do? I ought to get a shot of this. Yeah, we were a little stunned.
Yelling at you and sharp rocks and sports cars. It's a party.
Yes, all bad. It's all bad, yes.
Well,
there's so many roads we could cover, but we should probably try to move on. I mean, one of the things that I love about this is we are curious to hear from you guys, because we are looking forward to in 2017 doing a little more traveling, and wherever we go to shoot a car, you know, we're excited to have great roads. So we've done a lot of the Western U.S., but a lot of you guys have done everywhere else. So please let us know your thoughts. We're going to try to do a car debate for Jay. Who we mentioned recently, because Jay ran into somebody else listening to the podcast. We told that story. We had Corey on a while back who was shopping for his very tall boss.
Yes.
Jay randomly ran into Corey at the Detroit Auto Show. We mentioned that small world story already. But now we've circled back to cover Jay's car debate, and I may have to stop and just sit quietly for a while, because this one just grinds my gears to a halt.
If you've seen the end of Icon, I have made an exhortation for all of you who own a 1M to go drive them. For that matter, if you own a BMW of any sort, go drive them.
Yep.
Jay doesn't own a 1M. He owns two. A black one and the Valencia orange one. Todd's in pain over here. You can hear him writhing on the floor. Jay owns over 30 cars. He said, I don't want to break the two-scroll rule here. I don't want to make it too long, but I've got 30 other cars. Jay, I'd love to share that list with everybody listening, honestly, because we're shopping for you, and we don't know what other cars you already have, which is my concern. However, Jay ran into Corey. They were talking about the Mark 7 GTI, and they were at the Detroit show. Coolest thing, but I liken this, I liken Jay's situation to be, it's going to sound strange, but stay with me. Jay, it almost sounds like you're tired of cars. And I want to create this scenario. It's like chefs. What do chefs eat when they go home? Do they secretly eat Taco Bell and KFC and Nasty in the Box? Or do they eat cold cereal and all the Mediterranean munchies like olives and salami and artichokes and cheese and all that stuff? What do chefs go make themselves after they spend a day cooking beautiful food for everybody else?
For other people. Yeah, interesting.
So therefore, when you have a 30-plus car collection and a lot of cars that you're experiencing, Jay has got two 1Ms? Two. I think you should sell one of them to Todd, but that's a whole other podcast debate. What else do you do here? I'm just sort of wondering, what do you consume? It's we've all been there. We're hungry and tired, and I just need food in me, but I'm tired of food, and I love food, but I'm just sick of eating, and I just – I need something to – I want to be excited about flavor again.
Well, I want to stop. I'm going to stop a lot in this car debate, but two completely divergent thoughts. Jay, first off, I will say this to you. Want to be friends? I think you and your 30 cars just need friends.
I
really would like to know where in the world you are, because you said you actually traveled to the Detroit Auto Show, so you're not in the Detroit area. Where are you and your warehouse of 30 cars, and can we come visit? That's right. I'm taking this opportunity to invite myself to your warehouse, because one of the things we talk about all the time here is that all of us, if we had the means, both financially and space-wise, we'd probably all have 30 cars. But most of us, this is the everyday driver car debate. I'm not sure we can see most everyday drivers from this pedestal we're on at the moment. We're talking, you have 30 cars. I'm just...
30.
I'm having so much trouble relating on one level, and another level, I'm seething with jealousy and can't wait to come visit. So I'm quite conflicted right now. I'm quite confused.
I still think your next car should be a 1M. I really do. That's the
I would like my next car to be a 1M. You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because here's actually – look, I'm going to try to wrench this to a place we can actually talk about it. Here's Jay's thing. He has two – I can't believe I'm going to say this sentence. He has two 1Ms, okay? The orange one has 21,000 miles. The black one has 11,000 miles. So neither of them are high-mileage cars. He also has an M2. Because if you're following along with the class, when you have 30 cars, you probably also have an M2.
Of course.
I love you, Jay. I'm shaking my head this entire time. I want you to know how conflicted I am. I'm quite baffled right now. Later, I'm just going to sit in a corner and rock. That's what's going to happen. But right now,
condolence cards can be sent to...
Exactly. ToddInTheCorner.org. Moving on. But he has these two 1Ms, and he has an M2 that he's been using as his daily driver. And his main question, the reason he's writing us, is not to brag, because he's actually been very subtle about the cars.
Clearly not. We're kind of overemphasizing things here.
We're really kind of making Jay out to not be the guy that he writes to be. But anyway, I'm having fun with it. But he's writing to say, okay, I have this M2. And I'm wondering, should I keep this as a daily driver, or should I? What he's thinking about doing is getting rid of the M2 and driving one of the 1Ms as a daily driver and keeping the other one.
That's such a
this
crazy
is the
statement.
Weirdest sentence ever.
That's so crazy.
I'm rewinding. I'm rewinding myself. But no. But here's the big thing I do want to say to you, Jay, and that is I have a thing in general where I don't get it when people own and drive multiple versions of the same car. And you see this a lot in families that have cars as appliances. Oh, look, we both have Acura TLs. I like the Acura TL. Why did you buy two of them?
Yeah. For a while, it was
if you
two
have
Hummers.
Two car-
His and
yeah,
hers
well,
Hummers.
You see that? You see that? Oh, we have two Suburbans. Look, if you have two cars and they are both the same car, branch out. Write to us at the Everyday Driver Car Debate, okay? We are here to help you. But I'm going to relate that back to Jay here, and that is – I think you need to have – look, if you've got lots of cars to have the opportunity to drive, don't have one that you daily drive and you have another one in reserve of the same car. Legitimately, sell one of your 1Ms. I would like to have a conversation with you about maybe selling one of them to me. Or you know what? Could it be a tax write-off? Why don't you donate a 1M to Everyday Driver and write it off on your taxes? I've got all kinds of crazy ideas.
Financial planning also brought to you by
Yes, exactly. I could take a 1M off your hands, Jay, if you really want to get rid of one. And you know what? You should get rid of the high-mileage one, which happens to be orange. And if you've met me at all, I like childlike orange cars that slide sideways. So I think I could help you, my friend Jay.
You're making your case.
I am.
Making your case.
But no, legitimately, I think the answer is not to drive one of the 1Ms, this is so insane, one of the 1Ms every day and keep the other one in reserve. I say just keep one 1M. Let's get you a different daily driver if you don't want to keep the M2. I actually think the M2 is a better daily driver than the 1M. But if the M2 isn't doing it for you, let's get you a different daily driver and just keep your one of your 1Ms as one of your slate of cars.
Mm-hmm. One of your 30. We've got to get to the bottom
check,
of the email
please,
here.
Check, please. My brain is now mush. I need to move on.
I've got to get down here to the bottom where Jay says, what do we think? Because you mentioned his scenario, you daily driving the Valencia Orange 1M. Mm-hmm. he loves the M2. I love the M2. I look forward to my M2. And he's looking at the Camaro SS1LE or a 981 GTS or a 997 GTS. Okay. And he's also excited about the Shelby GT350. Okay. All right. But without knowing the other cars that exist, Jay, I look at this and I come back to my story. I come back to the, it's not that you're tired of cars, but you're looking for flavor. And jumping from latest thing to the next latest thing to the next latest thing, we would all love to have those cars. We would be freaked out and giddy with joy just having the opportunity to buy those cars. I mean, I keep coming back to my 981 GTS. You think Porsches, wow. You ask yourself while you're driving this car. I ask myself, how does 90 miles an hour or 120 miles an hour feel so relaxing or stable, smooth, uncomplicated, such a non-event? How does this car require so little of me when the straight line speeds get so high? How is that possible?
Yeah.
So therefore,
it is shocking.
Porsches are not immune to this in terms of the connection. I love the connection, but I've got to come to Lotus. I don't know if you own any Lotai, but it's the food that chefs eat when they're tired of food. And this is a Porsche guy talking here. Because
I take your point. Yeah, it's a palate cleanser from an automotive perspective. I see where you're going.
Well, listen, there's less isolation between you and the road. And I'm thinking about the Lotus 400 in my mind while I'm talking to you all.
The Vore 400. Ooh, yeah.
Less insulation, sound deadening, less electronics and features, less weight, less metal, less bureaucracy, less lawyers, less overthinking of everything. You can almost sense how few employees Lotus has when you drive the car. They're very dedicated employees and they're very good at what they do, but there's just less of everything and it strips away everything. And like I said, Porsche is not immune to, you know, adding features and all that stuff. They just overcome it with I don't know how. But the next generation of Porsche always seems to outdo the last, and you want that generation now too. So how is this possible? But Lotus, it's the food you eat when you're tired of food. That's my
interesting.
And I thought of the way I felt when I drove that 400, and you and I drove it for the briefest of moments in Europe.
And
as a Porsche super freak, I loved that car. I marveled at the.
It's a very good point.
The light. Well, this is driving. I've never done driving before. Wait, yes, I have, but this is a different take on the whole story.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. They have a very unique flavor that obviously, as we know, speaks to me. And you've accidentally come up with this week's T-shirt. Last week, I actually did make the T-shirt.
Yes,
I did make the T-shirt we talked about last week. That was "Ask me about cheap Phaetons," and I have my own on order. Just so you know, I made it. I ordered it. I told Paul I did it,
and I think
he's still shaking his head at me.
But we did make the
"Ask me about cheap Phaetons" T-shirt, so we have that. But you've come up with this week's accidentally. It's the Lotus logo, and below it, it just says "Less lawyers."
You know what I'm saying, though? It's just less of everything.
Yes. It feels – I actually like the fact that you brought up – used the word bureaucracy. It's weird to think of bureaucracy in a car company, but you're right.
I mean, there is that.
You get multiple layers of just bureaucracy and company infrastructure, and you start to feel that in cars. And you're right. Lotus survives outside of that in many ways, or barely survives outside
of
that.
Right.
So I love that you brought it up. I believe it or not, I read Jay's story and didn't even think Lotus, but I'm glad that you did.
I mean,
nope, I didn't.
The GT350, the M2, the 1M, the Porsches, all amazing, all luscious and amazing and beautiful, and you would be happy. But for how long, Jay?
For how long?
And so I think of, what's your new love affair? What's going to make you rediscover everything and go, I look back at this car. That's the car I gravitate to despite the rest of the collection.
Interesting.
It's the car that intrigues me that I can't figure out. It's that person that you cannot really read.
Sure.
You can't put your thumb on them. Are they kidding with me? Are they real? Or are they those people that you think everything that they say to you is a lie? The stories are so fantastic and so outrageously cool. You think, are you lying? Did that really happen?
Yeah.
I felt like that with the Evora 400. I felt it really.
That's cool.
Metal and molecules and all the materials that everybody else has to work with too. This is how Lotus figured out how to use them. Wow,
that's so interesting. I'm liking this breakdown from you because we hadn't. I mean, people have seen that piece on the Evora 400, and you and I did. We drove it combined for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
it was unbelievably
fast.
Briefest of time.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear how it struck you. You know, with your background and with your GTS and all that, it's interesting to hear how it struck you because no one's surprised that I enjoyed it. This is not. I mean, this is like the lowest surprise category. People are drinking themselves into a stupor right. every time I mention Lotus on this podcast. Right. So this is not a surprise. But it's interesting to hear the kind of reset feeling that it gave you, and I do think that is a great recommendation for Jay. I had a couple I wanted to comment on that he either brought up or ones that he didn't bring up, which I think are kind of conspicuously absent.
He might have,
you
though,
did mention
in the 30-car collection.
He might, exactly. He might have them. Who knows?
We don't
know. You mentioned the brand-new Camaro SS 1LE. Interesting, but I don't think of that car as, let's find you a daily driver. I hope you're going to go drive that car hard. I hope there's some canyon runs. I hope there's some tracking. I feel like you buy the Camaro SS 1LE as a daily, I kind of feel like you're not playing to its strengths, my personal opinion. But then you brought up Paul's mentioned already the GTSs. Yes, you'd be happy with those cars. But I do think you're on to something, Paul, as maybe that kind of German refinement perspective there, maybe we should step away from that. But there was one I felt like, where is this on the consideration list? Why is there no Corvette C7, or more specifically, the Grand Sport?
I almost like the Grand Sport better. That's funny.
I do too. Because the Grand Sport is all of the Z06 look, but it's not the extra track madness, if you will. So if you dailied that car, I think you'd still enjoy it. It's a good place to be. It's a nice car. It's got good noises. It's a great car. If you want to track it, fantastic. If you want to cruise in it, great. And it's very different than the other stuff you've listed off here. So I really wondered, why isn't the C7 listed? And what about a Grand Sport? Because I know it sounds like a left turn, but I think it's weird for me to say this because it's not, I don't know that it's really, really reality, but I feel like the Grand Sport makes more sense as the daily than the Camaro SS does.
I can see that.
I feel like that.
I can see that.
So that was the one I really put out as, why is that not on here? So after you donate one of your 1Ms to Everyday Driver, preferably the orange one because it's the high mileage one. That's the one you really ought to get rid of. But anyway,
man, that thing's a bucket of bolts now.
Yeah,
barely,
I mean, come
runs
on, man. That's 21,000 miles. What are you keeping that for?
Slough that off,
but no,
Jay. Come on. Why are you keeping that bucket of bolts around
But in reality, the people that have 1Ms, by and large, have low-mile 1Ms. Your 11,000-mile 1M is probably going to be the one you should keep.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I would say if you're wanting to unload something, keep the M2 because it's different than the 1M. Keep one of the 1Ms. I'll take the other one. Get rid of the other 1M.
Right.
And then let's get you something that is very different. And I love that Paul went for Lotus. I am actually going to Corvette. And this is a weird one, but fun.
It is. And we both went to the things that aren't our natural proclivities.
You're right.
I liken that to because we love cars. And just because we have our preferences doesn't mean we can glom onto something that just isn't always us. Because, of course, it would get boring if I said Porsche. But Porsche is not immune. They're not perfect. As you said, there might be a little bit of something lost because they just do it so well. They're just such a world beater. Wow. I'm floored. I love that. But then that reset feeling, as you succinctly stated, Lotus, less lawyers. You're welcome, world.
That's the T-shirt. But here's the thing. I mean, we talked about it a lot just in relation. I know some of you are sick of this comparison, but in relation to my FRS versus your GTS, the biggest difference, yes, there's power, yes, there's price, blah, blah. But one of the biggest differences in those cars at the basis level is level of refinement.
Yeah. Yeah,
that plays into price. It plays into everything, is level of refinement. And the interesting thing is my car at 60 feels a lot more – there's a lot more drama in my car at 60 than there is your car at 60, which has no drama at all because it's 60 miles an hour. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there is something to be said for I hate to call this a problem because it really isn't. It's a success on the part of the automaker, but you can refine something to a point that the interaction with the driver is now getting muted. And the reason we like cars like the Fiesta ST and the FRS and the Lotus Elise, or maybe I should say I like cars like that, the common thread in all of them is a lack of refinement that plays back to you and gives you benefit in just driver involvement and drama, if you will. But look, I'll be honest. I came back from picking up my son tonight, and I was driving home having a conversation with him, and in the back of my mind thinking, this car is loud. I mean, it just is. Yeah. It's loud. Yeah. I love it, but you know, there's definitely a refinement section that is lost there, and we would have had a much easier conversation in other cars, but I love my car. So there is that trade-off.
Oh, yeah. And that refinement, I need that in my life. Everything the Porsches are and the fact that they just keep getting better, I need that desperately. The stuff you're talking about is it's
you need it, Paul. Yes, you need it. It's water, air, and Porsche. I understand.
I know.
Yes,
But, you know, the things, the aspects that you're talking about are not for all the time. 30 cars in? Maybe it is, and maybe you do need it.
Okay, fair.
You and I are not 30 cars into each of our collections.
True,
so that's
true,
why I come back to this different, trying to think differently here, and I realize I'm throwing rocks at glass houses that have Porsche etched in the glass, but, you know, maybe there's a time
and place. All of the windows in your house have got a little tiny Porsche logo in the corner.
They do.
It's Porsche glass.
Laser engraved.
No, that's terrible. That's terrible. Yeah, okay.
Yikes. Well, Jay, I hope that helps. We are fascinated, and of course, we would love to share the highlights out of your collection if you'd be so kind. Yep. If not, that's no problem. But we'd love to get a follow-up here because you can keep trading stuff in and out, but you know, you have it for just a little bit and you taste it and you think, okay, that was good, and you look around and you think, what's next? Do you have to go so high-end, McLarens and Ferraris and that kind of stuff, to extract the same kind of joy? Lotus Evora 400s are 102,000. The Grand Sports are 50-some thousand, 60-some
thousand. They're 60 to 70. They're not – I mean, the C7s are 50s, but yeah, the Grand Sport is 60 to 70.
All very expensive.
Comparatively.
But, you know, comparatively to the, you know, the drug that we all desperately crave, we're trying to pull it back so it's not a, you know, I don't know. I shouldn't go to the metaphors for drug dealing. That would be terrible, but you get what I mean.
I do. I still want to know where Jay's located because I think we may need a road trip. That's kind of what I'm really taking away from all of this. But something in his stable needs exercise. I mean, I realize I'm just kind of walking in and inviting myself
to Jay's
house.
You're saying, how can he possibly drive them all? I mean, if he did it all for a month, that's just one drive per month. They're sitting for 29 days.
There's what I'm saying is there's work to be done in Jay's garage, and you and I are dedicating ourselves to the task. This is what I'm saying. Somebody has to take one for the team and drive cars. And I would like to put my hand in the air and go, hey, Jay, where are you, buddy? So anyway, thank you for listening. Thanks for writing in. I love the story with Corey. I love that you took your son to the Detroit Auto Show. I think all of this is awesome. I love that you wrote in because we cover – I mean, obviously, we cover the gamut here. I mean, next week it'll be – well, somebody asked this evening. They were like, best car under $10,000. I mean, we're all over the map here. It's one of the things we love about doing this podcast.
Yep. It's a lot of fun. Well, we will jump into the questions from all the social media accounts here, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I'm jumping on a few here. There's good ones in here. Everybody keeps getting really creative. And since we're Porsche, I have to address this highlight. The GT4 Cayman RS. Is it going to have an impact on GT4 prices is what Omar asks us. I think it's going to be the same in relation to the GT3 RS 911 versus the GT3. The GT3s are still expensive and very desirable. I would still like to have one very much. I don't know that there's going to be that big of a jump anymore. If you were looking for some sort of GT4 prices went through the floor, hey, everyone. No, I don't think it's going to be like that. But what it does mean, since we're reading that engine is based on the GT3 RS motor and detuned 100 horsepower, guess what that means? You can hopefully instantly crank it way back up to 500 and suddenly, wow. So I'm...
500 in that chassis is madness.
Madness.
It's madness.
Yeah. But also, madness. But
Yeah, of course it is. But also, I think you're touching on something, though. What's interesting, I hadn't thought about using the GT3 as a reference, but I think that's a fantastic reference. Because what's happened with GT3 versus GT3 RS, again, we're talking rarefied air here, but if you look at our pilgrimage film, or you go on our pilgrimage trip, or you're ever at Spa or the Ring, they're giving them out somewhere. There's like a GT3 dispenser in a corner that we haven't found yet, and they're just giving them
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
They're supposed to be rare cars, and you go to either of those tracks, and you're sitting on the sidelines going, how did I not get one?
Right. Was I sick the day they had the sign-up sheet passed around? Or
everyone has one, which is the most insane sentence ever. But what's bizarre about the GT3 versus the RS is the GT3, you buy a new one, and it has kind of normal depreciation. The GT3 RS, you buy a new one, and it's instantly worth $100,000 more than what you paid for it. The RSs are so well sought after. Some of them are selling for, they're new, they're supposed to be, I'm going to get a little bit wrong, but like 160, 180-ish. People are selling them for 250, used ones, the RSs.
Yeah,
So what's happening is I'm expecting that is what will trickle down. That's a great point, Paul, and you've kind of set me on it. I think that's what we're talking about with the Cayman variation here. The GT4s will probably be, they will still sell. They will probably depreciate in a somewhat normal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
What'll probably happen if we use the GT3 as reference, if the GT4 RS exists, it'll be the one that almost instantly appreciates because it's rare and hard to get.
you could only get the Veyron. I've got the new Chiron. That's so much better.
What parallel universe is our podcast existing in this evening? This is like bizarro world over here.
I figured we'd just keep it in the theme since we were always, already talking about Jay's car collection. And anyway.
Good question, though. Interesting question because, we're obviously theorizing, and the last person you should take financial advice from is us. Please don't invest in a car because we said so. But it is fun to theorize.
Unless you'd like to donate it to the show for, putting it on camera and letting Todd drive
around. We will help you with documentation and write-offs. We will shoot an awfully nice piece of that car. But anyway, on Instagram, Cadbury wrote in and wrote something that may seem obvious, but I wanted to add one that you may not expect. He wrote in and said, what are our preferred summer tires? And then his joke was, since half of our podcast content is already tires, let's just talk about it further. Thank you for recognizing that we believe tires matter. I wish we had a tire sponsor because, boy, could we talk about that.
Yeah,
But I have to say, look, the obvious one here is the Michelin Pilot Supersports. I have them on my FRS, swear by them. We've been just about every car we've been in with those tires we've liked. I will say, Michelin has just released their new, whatever the fourth generation, they're calling it the PS4. It's the new Pilot Supersport. Haven't been on it yet, but that will exist. That'll be an interesting upgrade. But the random one that I thought of, Paul, is this one.
Okay.
The stock tire for the last-gen Camaro Z28, the Pirelli P0 Trofeo R.
Oh, yes. Made out of old discarded erasers. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. If you find yourself in a world where, for some inexplicable reason, the Pilot Supersport isn't quite doing it for you, that Trofeo R is practically bubblegum made into rubber form. It's a shockingly sticky tire. An incredible tire for capability.
I was going to add, we recommend Michelin, of course. We love that tire. I like your recommendations with the Trofeo Rs. But both Todd and I have had really good experiences with Kumho. And at the install place, the guy told me that they don't spend the kind of marketing dollars that Michelin would. They're not as prolific in terms of their advertising budgets, but they do still source their rubber, I think, from Michelin or Goodyear. It was something like that. So still really high quality. And both, like I said, both Todd and I have had really great experiences. I'm looking at the Exta PS91s, ultra high performance. They're great. They're inexpensive and really robust. We both had, wow, I hope that didn't damage the tire kind of moments. And they're fine. So that could be a really nice place to go if you're not going to pop for the Michelins or the Pirellis, for that matter.
I'm really glad you brought up the Kumhos because I agree with you. We have had great experience, and I would say this isn't perfect, but I would say it's almost like 90% the performance of the Supersport at 2/3 the cost. So depending upon what you're doing, I had great experience with the Extas for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I'll touch on three questions super quickly. Midnight Dory asks, if we could swap PDK into anything on the market, what would it be? Probably my espresso machine, so it could be a little bit faster in the mornings. And pretty much anything. I'd put it in a Kia Soul. PDK in a Soul, I'd be happy camper. We talk about the dual clutch a lot. We like just about all of them right now. I mean, again, all the usual suspects make a great one. Porsche is very near the top, but you can't deny Volkswagen and BMW's both their dual clutch. Really great, really delightful. And it seems like it's hard to build a bad one, to be honest. It's just the fact that that technology and what it can do, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, the brain behind the PDK is the shocking thing. It does a fantastic job of knowing what to do at the right moment. That's the thing about that system. Because, I mean, they're all behind the scenes. They're kind of the same, like, mechanical technology. But the way the brain integrates is the shocking thing, and the PDK does a great job on that. That's an interesting question. You and I were joking recently about, as we're headed to Velocity for second quarter here, we're doing a lot of cutting of episodes, and that's where my head's been. And we were joking about the fact we may have the only non-build show on Velocity when we actually launch, because Velocity is buried in build shows. But having said that, you know, if we decide to do another show on Velocity, because, you know, we don't have anything to do and we got plenty of money, but if we decide to do another show and we were going to do the Everyday Driver build show, I have already thought of our first two builds.
Uh-oh.
And one of them is the one you just mentioned, the Kia Soul with a PDK. I don't know why, but just to say we did it. We take that Kia Soul that you like so much, we put some Porsche technology in it, and we make the ultimate Paul car. And then I have to share my other one, which you and I have joked about a million times.
In LA,
the car that you want, if you're a commuter in LA, the car that you want is you want to buy somebody's used Prius, because you want to get the one that already has the clean vehicle tag on the bumper that allows you to drive in the HOV lane with one person. Those cars are actually worth more money used because they just have that sticker.
So crazy.
What I want to do is buy one of those with the sticker on it and do what they did with the Clio back in, what was it, the 90s, where you rip out the rear seats and you put a Viper V10 in the back, in the back seats, make it a rear-wheel drive Viper V10 driven Prius. It's not even a hybrid anymore. It just looks like the hybrid shell, but it has that telltale little sticker on it, and then I want to drive it in the HOV lane. This is my build show. I want to drive it in the HOV lane because of that sticker with a Viper V10 driving the rear wheels.
Totally.
That's the Prius I want.
If we
There's
could straight pipe it, even better. I mean, it gets the clean, you know, ultra low emissions vehicle rating anyway, so can we just straight pipe?
Awful.
I like the Viper or the Voodoo V8 out of the GT350, something like that. Just you know, about 2 feet long of pipe. That's it. No catalytic converter, just pipe. Done.
That is one of the tackiest ideas ever. But I'm just saying, you give me a build show and ridiculousness like this will occur. I don't need to make a hot rod, but a Prius with a V10 in it. Let's do that.
I'm still surprised nobody's done
this.
There's
absurdity. Gosh. Yeah, why not?
Well, speaking of HOV lanes, Grumpy IT Dude says, I have a Tesla. It's not a question, but it's bloody awesome, and he felt he needed to tell us. And we do understand. They are awesome for many reasons. So
the question is, does he have a Tesla with a customized license plate that is something about charged or Nikolai or no gas or something that I swear there is a subclause in Tesla ownership where you have to get some sort of snarky license plate. So I would applaud you if you had a Tesla that just had a license plate on it with just the DMV number. That would be the rarity in that world. But yeah, they are very cool. We had related questions on Facebook. Jordan started it and then Brian added to it. And the question, I'm going to kind of summarize it, but the question is, Jordan's asking about a turbocharged Yaris. Might one come to the general public since Toyota is making one for World Rally? So they're doing that. So he's asking about a turbocharged Yaris. Could Toyota bring this to market to compete with the Fiesta ST, or is it too little too late? Interesting question. And then Brian jumps on the question and just says, while we're talking about this, do we think Toyota is capable of making a straight-up sports car to sell in their lineup, or do they always have to partner with people? So both guys are talking about Toyota's tendency to essentially not make straight-up sports cars anymore, the GT86 being the only exception, but it's a co-project. So and then now, of course, you as you've heard about the upcoming Supra is supposed to be in collaboration with BMW. So this is what leads to Brian's question and kind of jumps onto Jordan's question of what's up with Toyota and sports cars and performance cars. And I'm going to say the problem for Toyota is not I think it's all the accountants. I hate to say it that way, but it's all bookkeeping because as we've talked before, sports cars don't make good margins. So if you partner with somebody to make a sports car, a la Subaru, a la BMW, right, you are splitting the damage, so to speak, and you're still able to wind up with something in your lineup that seems a little bit sporty. I think it is a hedge bets problem more than it is a technology problem at Toyota.
That's a bit of a throwdown question. They used to. They certainly used to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's because of technology and the changes that we've seen with hybrids and then now migrating to full electric vehicles. It seems like all those dollars are being put towards fully electric platforms. And I'm sure every manufacturer is working on their own. So when it does come to a pure sports car, that's not the market anymore. Like Todd said, that's not, you know, that's not where the dollars are. That's not where the future and the bread mm-hmm. and butter is going to be. Mm-hmm. So they've got to develop all these new technologies and push those further. So when it comes time to do a sports car that's going to be the halo and bring people to the brand, I don't blame them. Toyota does have plenty of resources, though, to do it on their own. They've proved it before.
Of course.
They're enormous. Yeah. And they could. So I scratch my head and I think, why wouldn't you just make it genuine Toyota? You've got loads of racing history in just mm-hmm. about every mm-hmm. category. From NASCAR to Group B to you name it. They've got racing heritage up one side and down the other. So they definitely could. And I would love it. I'd love it if they did. But maybe they've just kind of hamstrung themselves into, all right, well, we're transportation, good, reliable, great price. Okay, you know, we're done with
It's margins and what sells volume. And, you know, look at the cars that they sell, the Camry and the Corolla. As much as we don't talk about them as enthusiast cars, because they aren't, even if you get the Corolla with the spoiler, still not an enthusiast car. I'm sorry, I have to keep beating on that. But the thing is, both those cars wind up in the top 10, both of them, top 10 best-selling vehicles every year for as far back as you'd kind of like to go. When that's your margin, you're going to keep making that car because I laughed the other day when I saw the new 86 commercial and they talked about only 8,600 of you will be able to buy one of those this year. And I thought, how many minutes will it take for Toyota to sell 8,600 Corollas?
Yeah.
It makes my skin crawl, but, you know. Plus, I also don't think that 8,600 is a bragging rights number for a limited edition car, by the way. But – compared to Corolla sales, it's a drop in the bucket, and that's where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think they build that many in a day, don't they? Gosh.
Practically. Not a question, but I had to at least give a shout out to from Instagram here. Z06916 is his handle, and he wrote in and he said, I don't know if you read this, Paul. He wrote in and he said, longtime listener finally ordered himself a car.
Okay.
Our recommendation to him, we had actually done a car debate for him. Our recommendation to him was to try the ZL1, 2015 ZL1, and the M235i. He went and drove them both. He liked them. It got him driving things. Then while he was out and driving things, he decided to rent himself, I don't know what happened, but he decided to rent himself an R8 V10 for the day. Then he promptly, by his description, pulled a Paul and doubled his budget.
I did see that.
So he has just bought himself a 2017 Z06 Corvette. He's thrilled, and he's thanking us for it. I'm not exactly sure how our influence helped there, but what I'm thrilled about is that you got a car that you were that excited about, and you feel like we were helpful to you. So that's awesome. I just love that you drove a bunch of stuff and decided you had to pull a Paul moment and double your budget. And then you bought a car you love. Awesome. Love the story.
We're here for you, and I just love that he took our financial advice. He got something he loves. Life is short. Buy the double your budget. Life is
life
short.
Life is short, and your budget has nothing left. Frightening.
There's
frightening.
Two T-shirts on this podcast. I love it.
It's anyway. I'm going to be only affording T-shirts when we're moving on. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly.
I like Dammy's question here about our favorite automotive racing livery. And I am a sucker for the Martini stripes. I love the Martini stripes. But I also love the BMW art cars. That speaks to me, especially the M3. I think it was a GTS done by Paul Koons in 2010. Really dug that one as well. So look up the BMW art cars. I really love the concept, and I love that it's so very BMW. It's a little bit rogue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's just kind of them, and I've always loved that they've done it ever since the early 70s. So art cars and Martini stripes for me, of course, you know, comes back to Porsches.
Yeah, not surprised.
Let's see where I was going there.
Here's the thing. I didn't pick this because it's Lotus, but I remember as a kid being very attracted to the John Player Special livery, the black livery with the gold letters. And, of course, it was a Lotus livery. And at the time, look,
that's
I was too young to realize that I liked Lotus. But the John Player Special F1 cars, I just like that. I like that sleek black and gold thing. I still think that's cool. I mean, there's even a picture online here of a guy that took his Lotus 211 and gave it kind of as his own golden black John Player Special. I'm not a big livery guy. I'm not a guy that really wants to go get a car in livery. But the John Player Special stuff I always thought was cool.
Didn't Andretti and Senna both use that livery, if I'm not mistaken? Didn't they both have it? Andretti,
somebody will correct us at some point. Andretti, I know he did. I know he did for sure, yeah.
I thought Senna did as well for some mid-80s Formula One race. I could be wrong, but I thought that was the case. Anyway, great question, very creative. And speaking of creativity, Casey Cook asks me, what manufacturer do we think needs to be saved as far as exterior design goes? I don't care how many Matthew McConaughey's you hire, it's Lincoln. I don't care.
I did not see that coming. One of you, actually, I should find it. I'm sorry I can't call out your name, but I'm thinking of it as you mention it. One of you actually went to your recent auto show and you tweeted from the Lincoln booth, Lincoln, nothing to see here.
That's
Thank
right.
you for listening. Thank you for sending that. It is cool.
Who was that?
I'm scrolling. I am answering your other question, by the way, Paul. And yes, Senna did drive a John Player Special. I wanted to make sure I'd seen a photo of it before I confirmed. But the
okay,
internet
good.
Has come to my defense. So yes, he did drive one. But no, the Lincoln, nothing to see here, and you bringing that up as a design thing is just that spectacular. Thank
Talk
you.
Talk about That's a company wonderful. That needs creativity, and yes, they need saving. They've got the history. They've got it. And the name is there. But man, is that product lineup need to be completely axed and shot behind the shed because we've
got interesting to see what happens with this Continental. I don't know.
I just think it's going to be meh, more okay. And Matthew is enjoying himself in the front and the back seats and okay. They've got a gem there. They need to stop looking over their shoulder, stop looking at Bentley, stop looking at Cadillac, do your own thing, bring the noise, bring alternative fuels or powertrains and some cool tech and some amazing styling. That would revolutionize things, I think. And follow up to that, he's asking me if I could pick any brand to design for, which brand would that be? Surprise, it's Kia. Talk about a brand.
Of course it is.
That
of course
has
it is.
Potential. I would get to work with Chris Chapman, Luke Donkervolka, and Sang-Yup Lee, who designed the new Camaro. I could work with all three of those guys. That would be a pleasure. That would be amazing. They are loaded with design talent. And Kia can do anything right now. They've got the Soul, the electric Soul, the new Stinger GT. And imagine if they came out with some sort of cool roadster like the Miata or an S2000.
Would be cool.
And
it
Kia,
would be cool. Yeah.
They could pull it off. It'd be turbocharged goodness. And that would be a cool driver's car. They could do this. They're nimble, flexible. Anything goes. They've got a good style. It'd be Kia. Done.
Well, you know, Mark, you're in charge of the drinking game, so I'm going to call you out and say you have to add many, many Kia categories because I remain boggled that you have, you, Paul, have such very high-end and excellent, exquisite taste,
and this
desire for Porsche products, and yet somehow Kia is in your upper echelon of things you are attracted to. I find that amazing. But it just proves that we can talk about all of it. That's very much the case.
I don't know why, but yeah, Chris designed for BMW. He did the X5. Luke was the former design director of Lamborghini and Bentley. And Sang Yup did the Camaro. And now all these guys, and Peter Schreier of Kia and Hyundai, yeah, used to work for, yeah, Audi. Why is Kia attracting this kind of talent? Why?
Fair point.
What's
Fair
going
point.
On yeah. there? And they came out with the Stinger GT, and everybody went, that's a Kia. I want it.
I want
to drive
Exciting.
It. I'm floored. And so I'm so attracted to this. They can do anything right now, and I'd probably like it.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? You just struck on something else, though. They have the opposite problem, not even problem. They are free from Lincoln's problem.
Uh-huh.
They are a brand without a history that they feel like they have to reference.
Sure.
And so they are able to charge and blaze their own trail and go, who are we and what do we want to be known for and what are our icons? Because our icons are yet to be made, versus a brand like Lincoln, who's looking back in the 1960s and the suicide door Lincoln Continental and going, let's go back to that.
Right.
So
right.
What an interesting juxtaposition in those two companies. Kia's still going, what do we want to be? Lincoln's going, what were we? You know?
Kia's unshackled.
It's a fascinating thing to think about.
Yeah,
absolutely. They can do whatever they want. I love that you said that.
Even Patrick Lloyd referenced the Kia Pro C GT, which is available in the UK and not in the US. Gorgeous, great-looking hatch. I want to drive it. Not available in the US. Why on earth not? Come on. That car would sell. It'd be another hot hatch option. Patrick, thanks for calling that out. And, I don't know. I'm just intrigued by the unshackled nature of Kia. It doesn't matter that they're...
I see that.
Okay, so they're, less expensive cars. That's actually even better for them, I think.
Agreed.
You know?
Yep.
That's a plus.
Yep.
Anyway, what other questions did you have before we wrap this podcast up?
There are a million, but I think we've reached a great place to call it for the night. I want to thank you guys for listening. Obviously, twice a week we keep doing these podcasts. That is going to continue, even though we're doing the March for TV and trying to keep the YouTube channel up at the same time. It is a lot, but you guys respond wonderfully to it, so thank you. We welcome your reviews and your ratings on any of the content you're consuming. We're getting a lot of really nice emails from you as well, and we appreciate that. We are still reading all the emails, and you can write to us, everydaydriver.com or everydaydrivertv@gmail.com with your own car debate, and we'd love for you to rate the podcast as well.
Agreed. Thank you, guys. As Todd said, really appreciate your interaction. It's a lot of fun to read the questions, even though we can't get to all of them. Please keep reposting if you feel like that, and we're going to do our best. But until next time, thanks, everyone. Cheers.